Episode 1384, My Strength is My Story with Ann Bogle. I'd rather be reading.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at a stop
sign, watching. Happy, happy day. It is my favorite day of the week. It is My Strength is My Story series, and we have with us the comeback gal. Yes, it's Ann Bogle. She is back with a brand new book, I'd Rather Be Reading. We have such a fabulous time, and I'm telling you, whether you like to read or not, you'll want to listen in to all of her words of inspiration. For those of you who are new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Ann's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already even had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com, where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, fall is upon us, and I can't believe that not only do we have Halloween, Thanksgiving into Christmas, but then it'll be winter, and we'll want to be snuggling up in front of a fireplace. No better way to celebrate the seasons than with a good book and a cup of hot whatever you like. Anne shares with us some incredible delights and dilemmas of the reading life. We talk about the reading roots. We talk about kids in reading. If you have children and you're like, you need to be off of your electronics and onto reading, you want to stay tuned. We even talk about decorating and bookshelves, her library, and oh my goodness, what's on your nightstand? Yes, she tells us a few secrets. You will have a blast. She will just warm your heart. So without further ado, let's welcome in Ann Bogle. I'd Rather Be Reading. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited we have on with us a comeback kid, meaning that she's been here already once before. Her name is Ann Bogle. I love it. She's a wife and a mom to four children. As the creator of the popular blog Modern Mrs. Darcy, Ann is known by readers, authors, and publishers as a tastemaker through her popular book list and reading guides. She is the podcaster of What Should I Read Next? Ann also has written now two books, Reading People and her latest book, I'd Rather Be Reading, The Delights and Dilemmas of the Reading Life. Oh my goodness, this book is a gorgeous book. How are you, Miss Ann? Welcome back.
I'm good. Thank you for having me back. It's great to chat again.
Oh, I've missed you, honestly. I cannot believe it's been almost a year since we chatted.
I know. It goes so fast. I feel so old when I say this, but where does the time go?
It does go by fast. And to think that you now have two books, not counting everything else that you've read and written, but actually two books, that's incredible.
Well, there's not one coming out in September 2019. So thank you.
So we can breathe again and wait for next year at the same time?
I don't know about you. I can breathe again. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to talk to you. And if I need to write another book for that to happen, I can get on it. But not next September.
Yeah. Well, I am so delighted to have you back. So let's jump in first and talk all about books. You know, it's fall, the leaves are starting to change. It kind of brings up those warm, cozy feelings. What makes a beautiful fall day for you?
Ooh, well, we are having very unseasonal weather where I live. So my heart says fall, but my forecast is 94. I'm in Kentucky and it's hotter in it's hotter here than it is in Texas right now. And that's just wrong.
That is wrong.
I love fall because it's got the gorgeous transition season that spring has, but with a lot fewer allergies, but a gorgeous fall day. I like just a little bit of crispness to the air. It's something like Christmas. Crispness. I like crunchy leaves. I like a beautiful blue sky. I like that that precise temperature where you could wear a sweater if you wanted to, but you'd probably be okay in just your t-shirt. I'm really looking forward to this. I like when it doesn't seem stupid to light the candles because it's 93 degrees outside. This is what I'm thinking about a lot these days.
You're already ready to get that roaring fireplace going, right, for those crisp evenings.
You know, right now I'd settle for long sleeves. But yes, that sounds awfully good to me.
Yeah. And as an avid book reader, I mean, you truly are that. What is kind of your way to celebrate fall into winter with a good book?
Oh, that's so interesting because I'm sure it's different for many readers, but for me, what I want to read in the fall and winter is different from what I read other times of the year. I really like, I love a good mystery on the beach, but I really love a good, complex, even convoluted mystery when it's cold outside. I'm willing to go a little darker in the fall, in winter, than I might in the summer. I have more patience for a slowly developing story, maybe because it's a better time of year to feel like you can settle in for a while, you know, cozy up with your blanket and your hot cup of tea and not go anywhere for an hour or two. And I know that I love a good campus novel set in a school setting. Those are wonderful to read at this back to school time of year, any place set with cold weather. Of course, you could read those in the summer if you want to, like, vicariously escape, but I'd much rather read about, you know, snow and cold in the wintertime than I would in the summer.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe it's a way of our bodies, you know, handling the body temperature literally from what's outside and also from what we're reading. Maybe we can handle it a little bit better.
I don't know.
Well, how did this book, I'd Rather Be Reading, come about? Because it's a very special book.
Well, there's a long version and a short version. I think the long version is I've been talking about books and reading publicly since 2011, and I've had time to talk to thousands of readers on my blog and my podcast and in real life about their experience of the reading life. And I'm a slow processing, back burner thinking kind of girl. And so I've had all this time for all these ideas to simmer. And it's the kind of thing that I love to write about. I love to talk about. And it finally occurred to me it would be really fun to write about as well. Because when you take those ideas that you've talked about with readers and you put them on paper and then readers read them, you get to keep talking about books and reading and the reading life with readers. And that is a circle I was very interested in perpetuating.
Oh, well, it's really exquisite, both the outside, which we'll talk about later, and also what you pin on the inside, the stories that you share. And it's stories that wrap up everything. I mean, you took me literally on a journey, and it was so cool. I just felt like, wow, I'm in a library, and I didn't even know it when I picked up this book. It was awesome. And I say a library because I think we need to go backwards in time a little bit and go visit our libraries, because they are, you know, really good heart, you know, a place that just stores history and stories.
I think so. Yeah.
So beautiful. Well, when did your love for reading start?
Oh, I mean, as a kid. I've talked to readers all the time who fell in love with reading at, you know, 4 or 14, or sometimes it's more like 44 or even older. But me and my books, we go way back. I think that was grammatically incorrect. I've been a reader for a very long time.
So are we saying like decades upon decades?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like any kid, I loved to, for my parents to read me stories as a child. Children love that. But then I remember that when I was very young, nobody had to tell me to read. I very naturally made my reading life my own. And that's evolved very much over the years, thank goodness. But I have felt fondly about my books since as far back as I can remember being able to read them.
Well, in your book, you share stories about the library and the bookstore. And how mom was one and dad was the other. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, in this book, I do write a lot about my own experience as a reader. And I thought I knew everything there was to know about my own experience as a reader, but I found that it's in the writing that I figure out what I really think and what I really feel. And I was really surprised to really articulate to myself what my reading roots really are, especially as they concern my parents. But as a kid, my mom is the kind of person who will drop off a bunch of stuff she doesn't want anymore at Goodwill and say that she's liberated them. And my dad tends to keep his stuff. And my mom acted the same way towards her books. She's not a collector. And my dad has books all over the house, enough for both of them, including this big, it's like a Narnia-like wardrobe in his study at home where he did his work. And this thing was huge. There were paperbacks stacked on top of each other on each individual shelf. And also they were stacked three rows deep in this massive wardrobe. I mean, you really could, like, it wasn't the fur coats you'd have to push your way through to get to Narnia. It would be all the paperbacks. But I remember I did this horrible thing when I was younger, and I decided that my dad needed help organizing his books.
Oh, no.
I know this was a bad idea. But in the process of this, my mom came in and she's like, "What are you doing?" And we started talking, and I said, "Where are your books? I know where dad's books are, but where are your books?" And that's the first time that it was explicitly pointed out to me that they had different philosophies and that she grew up going to the library with her father and that my father grew up going to the bookstore with his parents. And as a child, my mom would take me, following in her own family tradition, she would take me to the library all the time, as much as I wanted to go, it felt like. And back then, I wanted to browse, and I wanted to pick up my reserves, but I especially wanted to play Oregon Trail. And then my dad would take me to the bookstore, because he wanted to go to the bookstore. And I really realized, looking back, that he tended to take us to the bookstore now, I think, whenever he felt like he wanted to get my brother and me out of my mom's hair and give her some time to herself for a little bit. So that's where he wanted to go. That's where we went to. And now that I'm an adult and I have my own children, even before I had kids, I went to the library and the bookstore. They know my name at both places quite well.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean, seriously, when you walk in and everybody knows your name, it kind of sounds like, there was a sitcom named something like that. But it's in a library and a bookstore. Yep. I think it's a better setting than in the bar.
They do not know me at the bar.
Well, that's great. Well, I love your stories and what you share. And one of them that kind of grabbed me was the one about your first house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very special house, but there was also something very special next door.
There was. Well, it was a special house to us. And I tell the story about how my husband and I, we got married right out of college. So we were young, we were babies. And not long after we got married, we moved into our first house. And it was cheap. It was a dump, but it had a wonderful, it was in a great neighborhood, and it was also right next door to the library. And we didn't look for this house. This house found us through a friend in the right place at the right time, and a friend who needed to unload a house. She was the executrix of the estate of her old friend who had died at like age 93. This had been her home for many, many years. Actually, she was the original owner. Which sounds so quaint to buy a house from one owner. And we did feel like our house had good vibes. Like everybody loved her. She was known as being fun and spunky and vivacious. Her last significant purchase of her life had been a cherry red sports car. I mean, those are good vibes. It made me feel good to know whose house we were taking over. But it also meant that nothing had been done to the house for a really long time. Like there was Kelly Green shag everywhere. Every surface that could be painted was painted and was painted pale mint green, like toothpaste color. We had to do a lot of electrical work before we moved in, lest we burn down the house or lest it spontaneously combust while we were sleeping. But we didn't look at any other houses. This one just kind of found us. And we thought it was nice that it was next door to the library. Just like, oh, that's a little bonus. I feel differently about that now. But after 13 years there, because we didn't want to leave the books next door, I cried when we moved out. Hated to move on because even though we were moving like 1.2 miles away, it was not far. That's a wonderful radius to get to the library from there, but that's a car, not a walk. I mean, it could be a walk, but not with the books we check out.
No.
Yeah, you can't fit those in your bike basket or your backpack.
You need like triple backpacks, you know, one in the front, one in the back. The poor kids would be loading them too.
And that is a serious workout.
Yeah.
For years, I went to the library sometimes literally every day of the week. It was just, there was always a reason to go next door. And so we did. And I just really didn't realize, I think until I started writing this book, that, you know, I work in books now in a very real sense. And that's maybe not coincidence that I was next door to the library during those formative years when I was figuring out what I did want to do and where my interests really lay and what field was really going to keep my attention over the long haul. Like I could always see the library out my kitchen window.
Well, I'm glad that it led you there. it just sounds like, you know, it's like I want to go visit it, you know. They need to make it a historical landmark. This is Ann Bogle's first house next to the library.
Next to the library.
How sweet is that? Well, I know something else special is the cover of your book. I'd Rather Be Reading. What's the backstory to this cover?
I'm quite fond of that cover. Well, that is my personal library. My family moved into a new house a little over a year. Well, it's been about a year and a half now. And we had this extra room. Well, when my husband and I first looked at it, first we told the kids, don't worry, we're going to check out this house. We're never moving to that street. It's fine. It's fine. And then we came and we saw it and we were like, oh, this is a lot better than we expected. But there were two extra rooms when we looked at it that we couldn't figure out what to do with. And we hate to clean. We hate to pay the electric company every month. I mean, I'm grateful for electricity, but I'd like to keep that bill low. And we had these two extra rooms and we thought, we don't want to buy a house that's too big for us. What will we do with this space? And we finally realized one is a perfect home office. Duh, why didn't we think about that before? But the other one, there was this extra living room and you don't need two living rooms. But then we went, wait, there's a whole wall with no windows that we could put floor to ceiling bookshelves on. Like, we could have a library. And I think we wrote the contract immediately after that, and now here we are. So that cover is a watercolor of a photograph I took for David Holmes, the British watercolorist, and that is my library. So you can see the ampersand I got at TJ Maxx for $9.99. That little flower pot on the IKEA table I got at Trader Joe's last fall for it's a little gold pot and little tiny pink roses. Those are my little doodads on the shelves. It's my World Market turquoise chair and the library ladder that was the number one thing I wanted after the floor to ceiling bookshelves. And I do have to say that the library has never looked better than it did at the moment I took that glamour shot. Right now, there's a deck of cards scattered everywhere. The Game of Life is in the corner. I pulled a bunch of book jackets off for a photo. They're all over the floor. There's several pairs of children and adult, those are mine, shoes. But
so you're normal.
We use it. I mean, we spend a ton of time there. And I love that. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
But when my publisher said, let's put your library on the cover, I was like, we can't wait. Actually, that might be really nice.
Yeah. Well, that makes it all the more special. You know, when you write this and you put pen to paper and it all comes together, it's just, it's a part of you. And that's what I think is so amazing, that when you pick up all these books and you've read more books than I've even read. but it's amazing. You know, it's just like it jumps out at you more and you feel like you've got a piece of their heart with you. And so I just think it's really cool. So thanks for that.
Well, I'm happy for the personal connection there, because if there's one thing I've learned in all these years of talking about books and reading with readers, it's that reading is really personal. It's really individual. And we have such strong, meaningful, unique connections to the books we read. And I'm glad that the cover really reflects that.
That is beautiful. So how many books do you have in your library? Have you counted?
I have not counted. There is one number I counted up specifically for an essay in I'd Rather Be Reading. I wanted to know exactly how many unread books that I owned were on my personal bookshelves. So I went through and I counted. And the answer at the time was like 114, but the circulation it's turned over since then. I've gotten rid of some books. I've added new ones to the shelf. So I don't know what it's like now, but at a certain date in early 2018, it was 114 unread. I didn't count how many I'd read.
Oh my goodness.
I'm thinking, okay, readers are trying to convince me to put my personal library on one of those apps that track what you read.
Yes.
So that if you're at the used book sale and you think, as I was recently, wait, do I actually own a copy of Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird? Or do I just think I do because I've read it so many times, probably from the library? If I put all my books on an app, I'd be able to consult the app and see. And if I put all my books on the app, you just scan the barcode or the ISBN and then it keeps track of what you have. I would know exactly how many books I have. But the odds of me actually doing that, I mean, that just feels overwhelming. And I kind of like that it's not... that it's a feeling and not data. But then again, I'm a nerd and I would kind of like to have the data of my reading life, but only some days.
Only some days.
The short answer is I don't know.
Well, I love it that you don't know. And I think it's okay not to know, but to know that you enjoy them and that, you know, in reading your book, you do say about that personal connection. Mm-hmm. What do you think that is from the human aspect of it? Because your book, Reading People, mm-hmm. came from the personality part of things. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is with the human nature and how we are created and the connection to what's on a page?
Well, for some people, reading is a means to an end. It's a hobby. It's something you do to pass a little bit of spare time. But for devoted readers, for the audience who will enjoy I'd Rather Be Reading, the ones who get all gushy about our reading lives, reading is a lifestyle. And our books are part of who they are. They shape our identity. They're really a meaningful piece of our existence. And I think the reason that is that we readers really understand how a book is not just something you do, but it's a way to connect to the most important things in life. One of the reasons I love talking about books and reading with readers is you're never just talking about the characters or the plot. When you start talking about what's actually on the page, it's a shortcut to talking about what really matters in life, because that's what a good book is digging into. Same way with reading people. The reason a lot of people ask me, like, if you've been talking about books and reading for a long time, why are you talking about personality? And I feel like the personality frameworks I wrote about in my first book in many ways serve the function that a good novel or a good nonfiction book does. And that is that it lets you understand a new idea, a new concept, or especially a new to you point of view, because you get to slip inside the story for 300 pages. Personality framework lets you see what it's like to experience the world through someone else's eyes and what's unique about the way you experience it yourself. And I really enjoy that common thread. But importantly, I think books really clue us into what matters to us as humans, who we are as people, and what we have in common and what sets us apart. And it does it in a way that's that really lets us feel the weight and see it as a little bit as an observer, which I think ironically lets it really see us, lets us really see it clearly. Mm-hmm. In a way that we can't if we're living our own life sometimes. We need it to be pointed out to us. We need that new perspective.
Yeah, because in your book, you write, I quote, "Books have another advantage over reality."
Oh, do I?
Yeah, you do, really. Yeah. And in chapter 7, mm-hmm. life imitates art. Mm-hmm. And that just jumped out to me because I was like, you know what? It was a way, when you talked about it, it was a way of you can experience a first through a mm-hmm. book. And mm-hmm. so then when it actually happens, it's not so much a first, but it's more, yes, it's your experiences, mm-hmm. but you might be able to handle it better than not knowing at all, experiencing it as a true first.
Mm-hmm. That was an interesting journey to write that essay, because being a longtime You've Got Mail and specifically Kathleen Kelly fan, I had to write about my realization that she was really wrong. And that was hard for me to swallow at first. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of kidding, but kind of not, because I love Kathleen Kelly.
Right. Well, everybody's going to want to pick up their own copy. It is a fun read. This is a great book as a gift. I'd Rather Be Reading, The Delights and Dilemmas of the Reading Life. If you've got a book lover in the family, a friend, I just think it's pretty. And you know what?
Thank you.
I think it's pretty enough to put on the coffee table and read. I was giggling at some of your stories. We can't go through all of them, but also for someone who's older now, I wouldn't necessarily say wiser, is there still time for me to read the classics?
Oh, for sure. And it's so interesting. In talking with so many readers over the years, I find people who are not just asking if they if they're too old to read the classics. But I talk to readers who say, you know what, after school, I didn't care about reading for 10 years, for 20 years, for 40 years, and I'm just now coming back to it. And I mean, you're a reader. You can read whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Just kind of jump right on in.
Jump right on in.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
And also jump right on in knowing that you are in excellent company. There are plenty of other people out there who are asking themselves the same question.
Right, so stop asking and just do.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but if that's how you're feeling, then yeah.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's fall, you know, let's do it.
I think fall is an excellent time to read the classics.
Yes, yeah. Well, we're going to have to start pulling them out in our house. I mean, with my five children, we've gone through a few of them, but I think back to when I was reading and, okay, hopefully my children are not listening to me right now because they do tend to listen to my podcast episodes. I did not like to read. Seriously. I was the one who, I did it because I had to. I did it because it was an assignment. There was a deadline to it for whatever reason. And now I look back and some of them I remember and I think I read them. I don't know how I got by and took the test and everything. But I'm like, I wonder if I went back, how much more I would gain. Have you noticed that when you reread a book, in fact, let me quote you on this. Rereading can make you remember who you used to be, and like pencil marks on a door frame show you how much you've changed.
Well, I'm a rereader. I know not everyone is, but yes, that is something I like about the experience, is that for reading, I think that readers always know they're looking for a book they'll really enjoy. They're looking for the right book for them, but timing has so much to do with how you do or don't connect with a book. And, you know, you can never read a book again for the first time because you're not the same reader you were when you first read it. And it's just really interesting to see how you are different. You know, things that we thought were amazing when we were kids may strike us as totally melodramatic and sappy when we're older, or things that went straight over our heads when we were younger, we can actually appreciate when we're older, or books that were just too much or not enough when we tried them the first time can be perfect a little bit or a lot later. Yeah. I'd like to go back to the classics. So we are extremely vague about reading the classics, but there are books I love to read in the fall. I finally knocked Wuthering Heights off my list 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes.
Didn't love it. Because so melodramatic. So gothic. So glad I read it, though. That's an excellent book to read in the fall or winter. Because that's a book that a lot of people, no matter how they end up feeling about it, want to have read. I love Jane Austen in the fall. Emma and Pride and Prejudice feel very spring, summer to me, but Persuasion and Northanger Abbey are perfect for fall. Jane Eyre is a great one to read this time of year as well. Ooh. They just feel, they just have that indoor curl up in a chair, cup of tea feeling to them.
All right. Well, we may have to cut this interview short because I may need to start going to the library and get my books for the fall season.
The great thing about reading books like that, too, is there's never a wait for them at the library. Lots of copies, never a wait.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Unless it's an anniversary or somebody dies, and then you might have to wait.
That's true.
But otherwise, they're just ready and waiting for you.
Well, I love it. And encouraging our children and coming around and just kind of having a time of silence. I don't know about you, but with this technology, well, I don't think it's a phase we're in. It's called it's life now. How do you encourage? I mean, what would you tell the moms out there that are like, if I could only get them off of their phone or their tablet. How do you encourage children to really read and get into it?
That's a great question. And it's one I get a ton when I'm talking to readers in person. I think the power of suggestion is extremely valuable, much more so than, here, child, read this. I know that my children are not alone in that. If I say, read this, I think you'll love it, without them asking me first, that's counterproductive. My kids will come to me sometimes and say, I need help picking a book. Will you help me? And in that case, I will help them. But if they don't ask me, they perceive me as being very bossy and parental and not in a good way. If I'm like, you got to read this book. So the power of suggestion is great. My kids, for better or worse, human nature. They say don't judge a book by its cover, but we are much more likely to pick up books that look good to us. They do not like old, brown, 1980s polyester wrap books from the library. They like attractive books. That helps. But basically, my biggest answer is find books you think they're likely to enjoy and just leave them lying around. Another good thing is to involve people who are not parents who will still bring book recommendations into their lives, like teachers, school librarians, local bookstore owners, neighborhood librarians, neighbors, older siblings, especially kids who are like a grade or two older. it's not your responsibility as a parent to be the only one throwing good books in the way of your child. And really, if adults can all help each other out by recommending books to the people we are not blood related to in our lives, I think that would be great for young readers everywhere. There seems to be a trend with parents and educators pushing kids to read harder books at a younger age because it looks good in admissions packets, and that doesn't make anybody happy. So it's okay for kids to read what seems at or even below grade level if it encourages the enjoyment of reading. Reading should be something at a young age that you want them to experience as fun, not as mentally grueling and exhausting. So there's a time for stretching yourself, and there's also a time for reading easy chapter books in a row, because that lets them experience the pleasure of reading detached from the work that advanced reading can be. So there are no prizes for reading beyond your grade level.
Just read.
I mean, just read. Just read. And developing the habit of reading and the association that this is fun, not something that makes me want to bash my head into a wall, is really, really powerful for the long haul.
I agree. And the older we get, I think it's really helpful for us to be able to read more. I know the more I read, the faster I read. Because when I was younger, I felt like I was the slowest kid like in the entire school. Seriously, it was just not my strong suit. When you'd have to take those time tests, I was like, I'm still on paragraph two. You know, I haven't finished. But I know the more I practice, the more I feel like, oh, well, it flows more smoothly. And I just, and I get into it faster.
And that's an advantage of not trying to read the hard stuff, but going to the stuff that's easy for you as a reader or your child as a reader, is it lets you experience what it's like for the words to flow. So you know what it can feel like and should feel like. And to a certain degree, it's true that once you have the habit and you know how to scan, and I don't mean skim, I mean you know how to move your eyes across the page, you know how mechanically it works to read to the point where you don't even have to think about it anymore. It does go faster. But some people read faster than others. They just do. So don't be too hard on your young self. But I'm glad to hear that once you got the hang of it, it did go better for you, and then it was more enjoyable, so you wanted to read more.
Yeah, yeah. And it's grown with me even through my adult years now, and which is a good thing, because now my kids are older, and so I want them to see mommy with a book in her hand.
Right.
And I'm one who I like to hold on to the book. I like to touch, feel, see it. You know, I like that. I know as an author, you appreciate me purchasing the book that I can touch and feel. But what is your take on this? It's not a trick question. Are you one who likes your Kindle type things, book on apps, versus the actual book? Hey, I can hold it in my hand.
Generally speaking, I prefer to have a book I can hold in my hand. And the reason is I'm a very visual person. It took me years to figure out because I'm not a painter or an artist. And so I didn't think of myself as visual, but I need to see things in order for them to land in my brain. And words are visual too. So I really like to see things on the page because my brain likes to perceive where I am in the story, like percentage wise. You can just look at where your bookmark is and see about where you are in the arc. And I will remember about how far into the story I saw something and where it was on the page. So if I want to find it, I can go back that way, where an ebook just feels a little disorienting to me. That being said, there is a time and place in my life for e-readers, and I'm really grateful for it. Like whenever I'm traveling, I always take my Kindle. I love it. There are some electronic galleys. Those are books that haven't been published yet that I can't get in paper. I can only get on e-reader. And if that format works, I'll get it. Or sometimes if a new hardcover that's $29 there, I don't know the author and I don't feel like I want to hold it forever, but I do want to read it and I don't want to wait until I work my way up the hundreds of people on the library waiting list. If that goes on sale for $2.99 right after it's published, I will snatch that up and read it in that format. But all other things being equal, I would rather have the paper version.
Well, that's awesome. All right. So speaking of books and fall, because we're kind of snuggling in here with our cup of hot tea. What are some tips that you would give in arranging aesthetically beautiful bookshelves?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, first of all, it only has to be aesthetically pleasing to you. So your version doesn't have to be somebody else's version. sometimes, for a while, I organized my books by color in one specific room in my house. I don't do that anymore. But it's not because I couldn't find things. Because if I posted a picture or people would come over, they'd say, this is dumb. How can you find anything? But I am a visual person, and that's how my brain worked. And it was fine. It was fine until I took the jackets off. And then I realized, while I had an excellent memory for the book as it came into my life, I had no idea what color the publisher had chosen for the spine. So I couldn't do that. I had to put the jackets back on or do it alphabetically. But it only has to be pretty to you. People have different ideas of what looks good to them. Some people organize their books on the shelf by size or by height, more specifically. They'll have all ascending or descending within the alphabet. Some readers don't like to have two books of the same height next to each other. Some readers really love the colors. Some readers don't. Some readers like to mix in their paperbacks and hardcovers. Others like to keep them separate. I like to keep them separate, but I have an issue right now where I have some Ann Tyler in hardcover and some Ann Tyler in paperback. I have books in a series in hardcover and paperback, so they're in different sections. So I might need to make some choices here. I will tell you, as I say, and I'd rather be reading, the decorator's rule of thumb is, for beautiful bookshelves, you want to follow this style rule above all. You want one-third books, one-third stuff, like photos or that ampersand or TJ Maxx flowers or vases, TJ Maxx flowers, Trader Joe's flowers, or the vase, and you want one-third white space. But I have too many books for that. I have a lot of bookshelves, but I don't have that many. So I think books themselves are beautiful, and I have a high percentage of the books on my shelves. Some readers like to remove jackets because it feels more peaceful to them. Some readers don't want their books to be peaceful. Just whatever works for you is fine. Your fellow readers will be happy to advise you and provide you with inspiration.
Oh, I love that. Well, you've been an author now, a two-time author. For those who have a heart to write, what's some advice you would give them?
Oh, my best piece of advice is just put your butt in the chair and do it.
I like that. Straight to the point. Hit it hard. Oh, that's awesome. So we've talked about all these different books. You've given us a few titles. What makes a good book for you?
Ooh, that's a great question. So I do know the genre or subgenre I'm naturally drawn to, that I'm more like preternaturally disposed to really sink into. I like a literary-ish kind of novel with, this is going to sound so pretentious. I really admire when an author takes their time unfolding the story, is careful with their word choice, but isn't trying too hard. I am allergic to trying too hard. That writes about quieter moments, not like Big Bang moments. When an author can really make me feel the weight of a conversation at the dinner table, or a glance between two people, or how parents' reaction to, I'm thinking of a book I love this summer. Okay, like In a Place for Us by Fatima Mirza. That's one of the best books I've read this year. It's new. The author's like 26. How? It's so amazing. She started writing it in high school. Like, this should not be such a great book, but it's such a great book. I really loved it. To me, because it has what I like. It has a quiet story. It's about relationships, but she really makes you feel the emotional weight of these quiet things that happen. So one night there's a conversation at the dinner table about a spelling test, and it absolutely changes the family's life. But it's a conversation at the dinner table about a spelling test. It's not a big deal. But an author who can take one of these normal happens to you, happens to me moments and make you really feel the emotional weight and how that changed everyone's course in life without me feeling like they're banging me over the head with, do you see my point? Do you see my point? I really admire. I like a story that goes, that takes its time, but isn't slow, where it's quiet, but something actually happens. So I love Wendell Berry, Marilynne Robinson, Emily St. John Mandel. I love that Fatima Mirza novel, Wallace Stegner. That's my happy place. But that being said, I like a book that keeps me turning the pages, that makes me feel satisfied when I finished it, even if I might feel sad, even if I might not be happy with the ending, a book that makes me feel like, what else could have happened? Like, this is where we are. I prefer a book where there's someone to root for. I don't really typically enjoy books where everyone's unlikable and bad and horrible. But some people don't have that issue. And I like a book that does what it sets out to do. But don't we all?
Yeah. Indeed, we do. So have you ever started a book and never finished it?
Oh, I do this all the time.
Okay, good.
All the time. Yeah. And I know that some people say that they are completionists by nature. And I used to be too, but two things happen. Maybe three things. One, I appreciate the impulse to finish a book you started. Many people say they do this out of duty to the author. But if you get to the end of the book and you feel like you wasted your time, not that it wasn't to your taste or that it wasn't what you expected, but it was a waste of your time, that is not a good feeling. And it wasn't one I wish to repeat. And I think I had a run about 10 years ago where that happened a lot. So I was thinking about becoming an abandoner. Two, I came across an interview with John Irving where he says, if you're a grown-up, you can read whatever you want. Like, your school days are done. You get to choose your own books. Don't finish a book if you're not enjoying it. I do finish books I'm not enjoying sometimes for a whole host of reasons. But the fact that John Irving had very strong feelings about this. I don't know how often John Irving and I agree, but I was like, you know what? The man writes books for a living. He doesn't feel like people ought to finish his books out of a sense of duty. I think I can let this go. And the third thing is the more I started working in books, this is purely professional. Like, every year I put out a summer reading guide. I read every book in it cover to cover before I put it out to readers. And, you know, you can ask me anything. I've read them all. I can answer questions. I can vouch for these. I can't say that they'll all be right for you, but I try to describe them in a way that you can hear if it sounds like the kind of book that is right for you. But I start so many books for that summer reading guide, and I don't finish probably a tenth of what I start in that project because I can tell by page 10 sometimes, I do want to read this, but it's not right for this project. So I just set it aside for the time being. Or I don't want to finish this book. The tone is all wrong, like for me or my readers, or this goes to darker places than I'm comfortable with, or I don't really trust the author. I don't have a lot of confidence that this is going to make me feel like my time was well spent here. So just the sheer volume for reading for projects like that made me much freer to abandon, because if you finish everything you start, you literally cannot read those other books that are waiting for you. And if you have a compelling reason to want to read them, then you got to set it aside. I'm sure this will make some people feel like, no, I don't think I can, but
it'll put people on the edge.
That was my circumstances. Yeah. In my process.
Well, as an avid reader, you mentioned that you like kind of the mystery side of things. Are there any downfalls to being the nerd or the bookworm, as you call it?
Oh, well, there are all kind of dilemmas of the reading life. Someone just asked me at a book tour event, they said, when you finish a book and you feel like you'll never read anything as good again, so you have a serious book hangover, how long is it appropriate for it to last? And I said, why are you asking? And she said, oh, I'm still not over it. I don't know what to do. So there can be some serious emotional angst wrapped up in the reading life. There's an essay in I'd Rather Be Reading called I'm Begging You to Break My Heart about books that make you cry. There are lots of wonderful things about the reading life, but there are peculiar pains that go with it as well. Like when you get the call from your library that next book in the series you've been waiting to read, that you couldn't wait for, just came in, but you just left town for 10 days and that hurts. That hurts a lot. And non-readers will not feel your pain. Also, a complaint / thank you I get all the time is, since I started listening to What Should I Read Next, or since I started reading Modern Mrs. Darcy, or actually, and I'd Rather Be Reading, I talk about something like 100 books and how they mattered to me in this book. So since I read I'd Rather Be Reading, thanks a lot, Anne. I'm never going to finish all these. My to-be-read list is way too long. I mean, I thank you, but I kind of hate you right now. Non-readers
don't
have that
problem. That's
not very nice. you know, I think they say it sweetly.
Of course.
Right.
But they're you know, to read lists, I mean, you had what, 114 when you last counted back in early 2018?
That wasn't a list. That wasn't near. That was just in my library.
Oh.
The actual physical books in my home that I wanted to read and hadn't yet.
Oh dear.
I mean, there are other lists.
I'm afraid to ask then what might be on your list number wise.
Well, every book on that cart back there, for one.
Yes.
And I've got a whole bunch of stacks you can't see all around me here. And it's a great problem to have. But oh my, sometimes I'm not sure what I'm going to do about it. Yeah.
Well, I got a giggle out of this one. When I was reading your book, you talk about how you really prefer to read and get like right to the story because you don't want to waste any time. You want to, you know, you want to get in as much as you can. However, you know, you would leave out like the acknowledgments or the introduction, et cetera. How has that changed now?
I don't know what happened, but somewhere along the lines, I just completely fell in love with the acknowledgement section. Some of my favorite authors have really disappointing acknowledgement sections. I am looking at you, Emily St. John Mandel. I'm hoping for more from The Glass Castle out 2019, but they just say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Or there's a giant list of names alphabetized. But I love a good acknowledgement section because, especially if you're reading a novel it's a story that the author made up, the acknowledgements is their place where they get to be a person who has relationships as themselves, not as their characters. And you get all these interesting insights into their process, where they work. You really get a sense of how many hands are in making a book professionally at the publisher and the agency and the marketing and just how much goes into it and the friends and family support. People thank their favorite cafes. They thank their bars. They thank the music of Bob Dylan for inspiring them while they wrote, or they thank the lovely people at their local Trader Joe's because they couldn't have met their deadline without the tacos in the freezer section or something like that. I love the acknowledgments. And I also really love the dedication, and just because sometimes it'll say to Robert, but sometimes it'll say to Robert because of all those memories from the back of the pickup truck in 1947. It probably sounded a little racier than I meant for it to. And, or it'll say like to Susan, who always knew, or, you know, to Gretel, who inspired this story. And it just makes you go, And then of course I'll look for their name and their acknowledgements and see if there's any more information. And I also really love the epigraph, the quote at the front of the book that doesn't always appear, but often there's a quote at the front of the book that will, frame the story in some way. It's your first taste of what you're getting into. And it's the author kind of saying, this is what I'm thinking going in. This is what you need to know. And I am enough of a nerd that I really, really love that. I chose my own epigraphs very, very carefully for I'd Rather Be Reading.
Yes.
Really, you did. Really geeked out on that.
But y'all are going to have to pick up your own copy of I'd Rather Be Reading to read it, The Delights and Dilemmas of the Reading Life. Oh my goodness, you are just such a delight. And so for your nightstand, because you talk about your nightstand in your book too.
It's scary right now.
What's on your nightstand now? What books are there?
I'm currently reading Whiskey When We're Dry, a new release from late summer that I started a few weeks ago, but then I left for book tour and I can't take a 425-page hardcover that's already in process on book tour, especially when I'm going to visit a bunch of bookstores where I will inevitably buy books to bring home with me. I'm reading The High Cost of Free Parking because I'm a giant urban planning junkie. I've been saying I've been reading this for a long time, but it's like 900 pages or something crazy like that. The new Dani Shapiro out in January called Inheritance. I love her. I was thrilled to stumble upon a copy at a publisher's conference I was just at. Again, I was there for I'd Rather Be Reading. And, a couple books that have been there for a really long time that I'm not sure where they're going in my house, so I keep leaving them on my nightstand.
When do you shuffle them out? I mean, when do they go from like your nightstand to maybe a pile like on the cart behind you? Or do you have like a process, or you just shuffle when you shuffle?
I do have a process. Well, sometimes it'll get bad and then I'll think like this, I can't wait another minute. Like this is the next thing I'm doing, and I'll pull everything off and I'll dust and I'll put all the jewelry back where it belongs. And you know, the random stuff, the car keys, the extra set I hadn't been able to find, it was probably right there. Or when I'm organizing, when I'm shuffling the library around, I may think like, okay, what books are not here that ought to be here? And then I'll go get them. But the cart is actually, that's, I'm sure you can tell that has a very specific three-tier system. The nightstand books do not go on the cart. Yeah. the card books might move to the nightstand.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. but the nightstand books don't go to the cart.
They do not.
Gotcha. They do not. Well, I know in your book also, which I got another giggle out of. I think we all like to have this kind of perfectionism. And if we could have everything right and perfect, and if I could have my 2 hours of reading a day with my hot cup of whatever and whatever it may be, however you enjoy your read, you talk about deadlines. And I found it very interesting because a lot of us, you know, we've talked about timing. You said, you know, even with changing, we talked about rereading a book, and it comes down to, you know, timing. Sometimes a book may not speak to you, or it speaks to you differently. Mm-hmm. How do deadlines kind of fit into your reading life?
Oh, I was thinking about this right before we started chatting today. I got an email from my library that the new Robert Galbraith book, J.K. Rowling, the new book in her Cormoran Strike series, is waiting for me at the library, which I apparently requested this forever ago, because while we're talking, it just came out 2 days ago. So I must have been way high on the list. I'm sure they ordered a bajillion copies, but still, I must have been way high on the list. But I'm leaving town again on Monday. So I'm also Whiskey When We're Dry. That's overdue because I left for book tour. So I'm thinking, how fast can I read? If I pick that up today, can I read it really fast and finish Whiskey When We're Dry before I leave town in 3 days? Probably not. But maybe, because what if they're really good? If they're really good, then I can just kind of make the time appear. So I think I need to finish Whiskey When We're Dry, but that's really depressing because I want to read the new Robert Galbraith. And I hate how, you know, you're happy with what you're reading, but then something better may come into your life, or something perceived to be possibly better. Maybe this new Cormoran Strike book is just going to be too dark and too sad. Maybe this is going to be J.K. Rowling's bomb. I doubt it, but I'm eager to find out. But I have those 114 books on my library shelf that I haven't read yet. And it would be interesting to know how much progress I've made since I've counted them. But the thing about those books is I can read them anytime. I own them. They're in my collection. But when I pick up a book from the library, I have 3 weeks. If nobody else wants it, I can renew it a couple of times. But I have a deadline, so it might be now or later. And I do feel a little bit, I return plenty unread to the library. I'm really sorry, everybody involved. But that makes me feel bad because somebody went to the trouble to bring it to me. Like, the library staff gets paid with my tax dollars to move my books around the city. The least I can do is give it a try. But when those renewals come up, it's time to read them now or send them back out into library land. And I will need to proactively bring them back into my life later if I'm going to read them. If I have a deadline built in, whether it's professionally for blogging, library timeline, whether it's, you know, a book club or a coffee date with a friend, you're going to see somebody who told you to read a certain book and she's going to ask you, hey, have you read that yet? That can just be the nudge we need. Because when we have a deadline, the thing gets done. Those 114 books do not have a deadline unless I made a deadline and I, you know, decided they were going to be on a blog list or we were going to read them for book club. Or if I didn't read them by the end of the year, I would give them away. I would never make a deadline like this, but people do things like this. I wouldn't myself. But yeah, deadlines make things happen.
Oh, well, people are going to have to get themselves to the bookstore or the library and pick up their own copy of I'd Rather Be Reading, The Delights and Dilemmas of the Reading Life. You know, Anne, you're such a sweetheart. And I love your heart and just how it just wraps us around in words. And which is so neat because, you know, like I said before, I was not that little girl who loved words on a page. But I have become that older girl who now loves words on a page. And I just want to thank you for inspiring people out there to continue to read, inspiring those wannabe authors that are like, oh, I've been trying now for 5 years. And all that you do is just making an impact on this world, which is, I think, is awesome. It's all because of words.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You're very kind.
Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you. Where can they find you?
My hub on the internet is my blog, Modern Mrs. Darcy. It's modernmrsdarcy.com. And you can get my podcast, What Should I Read Next, on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we'll have all of those links for you in the show notes. But before I let you go, I have one last question for you. What has your love for reading gifted you?
Oh, I think it's Oh, shoot. You know what? I'm not going to attribute this quote because we've all heard it, but a reader lives 1,000 lives. The one who doesn't read lives only one. And that's really what I love about the reading life, is that you get to live in so many different worlds, so many different stories, experience the world through so many different points of view. And it's what I love about the reading life.
And it's a beautiful reading life. Thank you so much, Anne. I cannot wait to see what you're going to put pen to paper to next.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.